The following was recorded from Dictionary of American Regional English tape 0451, side 1, part 2.
So Nan says, why do you get so happy for this drunk? Oh boy. I think I better put down a list of the deadlines I got coming up. You know what?
Yeah.
Kathy said last night when she called, would you close that door, Ev? Really? Bothers me. It looks as though people are going to, more of them are going to be pouring in anything. Kathy said last night that, what a situation. Her brother's wife is expecting any day now. They only have one bedroom in that place. Kathy's got the upstairs. And her sister-in-law is being very particular about the apartment that she wants. She's not even in town. Kathy and Jim are shopping for it. And everything they turn up, it has to be a certain price. Have a shower, two bedrooms, and a dining room.
Really?
Yes. I said, Kathy, you're kidding. She said, no, I'm not kidding. And I said, well, is Jim going along with it? And she said, yes, he is. He surprised me. Since he's married, he's going along with almost everything. I don't know why exactly, but anyhow, the point is, if they don't find this ideal place for $140 or less, then Jim and Diana could be moving in with the. Can you imagine it? They've got one new baby.
Yeah.
And I said, well, doesn't Jim realize this? What he's faced with, moving in with your mother and father, with another baby they're already not quite out yet. And she said, I don't know what he realizes, but she said, I wonder if things get tight around here, if they really do have to move in, if you'd mind if I come down and stay there till John gets home. She said, I think otherwise it'd be, everybody's just going to go right out of their mind. They just got over one new baby. They get another new baby. So I told her that would be fine. She's going to come down anyhow the end of the month and wait here. I got thinking in bed last night after worrying about not hearing from John. I hope that maybe that isn't bad. I mean, it can't take too long, can it, if he's hurt or anything that...
I think really you're more likely to hear in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I think you hear immediately,
you know,
don't
right
you?
Yeah.
I think so.
They send a telegram or something.
That occurred to me after I talked to
her. That far from lines of communication.
And what do they do about the injured and so forth? I mean, we don't know anything about processing, but it seems to me that they get people out of places so fast that they identify them right away and all. So after, I thought 3 weeks is a long time not to hear, but it maybe is better than 3 days since your last letter,
yeah,
in some ways. But I didn't think to say that to Kathy last night. She's really getting scared now, and she hasn't been. She's been fine, but the closer it gets to the deadline, I think,
yeah,
the more you worry about things catching up with you, the law of averages and so forth. And being wise in the ways of the world, I know that the sad thing is that when John's out of there, I'll probably stop reading The War News altogether, or maybe I'll start reading it, I don't know.
Reading what?
The War News.
Oh.
What's going on when your own kith and kin is not involved. It's so easy to forget the whole thing.
Yeah.
Although I'm liable to have somebody else involved right away, and I swear that the next time they take a kid, I swear I'll have a private march on the Pentagon and raise Cain. This business of double jeopardy, triple jeopardy, several in one family going, it's horrible. It's such a horror to put the same people through the same thing every time that I don't know how, it's incomprehensible to me how they can even do it. One kid in school, I don't know what I told you about him, has a brother that was over there and he wanted to get married himself. He's 21. He's a real nice kid. He's typical guy though, that's he wants a job, all the good things and all, but he's so honest and down to earth. and so open. He's the kind of kid that'll fight you at the drop of a hat, but you present one good argument, he'll say, you know, I'm really dumb about all this. You know, what are you going to do with somebody like this?
Yeah.
He's so disarming. Anyhow, his brother's over there. He could use his job. I don't remember what it was. Something in automotives, I think. For something in drill press or tool and die makers, what he was. But he could use it for draft deferment. But he was feeling guilty about it because his brother was over there. And I said, well, why don't you just feel good about it instead?
Yeah.
I said, how many times does your family have to go through this business? To just be glad you've got something you can stay out of it. He said, yeah, but that doesn't seem fair to my brother. He's the one that has to go. And all that whole business. So I said, forget it. No family should have to go through double jeopardy. And I said, if you doubt it, ask your brother when he comes back what he thinks about you going.
Yeah. I've only known one person who went and came back.
And wanted all his relatives to go too. Yeah. Steve, when he came back, was very concerned for several months about all his friends who are still over there, still going through all that. And, you know, worried a lot about it, worried about being comfortable and warm and all that. But in several months, you know, the pressures of life were just too much. And how much can you be expected to retain that? That feeling, and not go buggy. Because you can't hold two ideas like that in your mind very long at a time. Feel guilty all the time. The only way to relieve yourself of feeling guilty, I think, is by doing something constructive. Even though you're not over there, try to apply yourself to the solutions, yeah. I think it's too hard, though, really, for a lot of people. Too hard. They're not equipped in any way for the movement.
No, you're right.
It's too complex. And it really takes you back to that whole Germany syndrome. How could all those good people do all those terrible things? Because as individuals, they weren't equipped to oppose them. And aside from any, I don't think any one people are monsters either. I just think it depends on what system they get caught up in and how much resistance they've got to it.
Yeah, but this is where Western individualism is going to be its own destruction, because we only know how to be individuals. We don't know how to be intelligently anything within a group. Kid gets out of school, has about as much experience in consensus as a mole coming out of his hole.
You mean by consensus, you mean by... you mean by consensus?
At arriving at an agreement among group people that they can accept.
You mean arriving at...
in school what anybody accepts. It's already decided what everybody's going to do.
Arriving at a consensus among intelligent individuals at how far they can go along together.
Yeah. Or, I mean, in many cases, realizing that they've got to go along together.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
See, committee meetings.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a murderous process.
Like faculty
process.
Meetings up at the university. It's macabre. Because I hear all these very educated people who don't have any more idea how to talk to one another and have absolutely no sense of the fact that they're in control of anything, so they don't care whether they do anything, really.
I know.
Sorry about that, Professor.
Well, I don't know, because I'm willing to let a lot of things go by consensus. I mean, not consensus, the so-called democratic process. A lot of things to be, because they don't seem central or enough or important enough to make a fuss about. But after you're fighting for a while for this and that, and I think that that whole Second World War exacerbated every idea that you ever had about not going along. You know, if you were not a goer-alonger in the first place, that sure gave you the idea you were right all the time. Because it just, what comes out of passivity and comfort is pretty, it's unbelievable.
I think Miller says about the apathy as the basis of a totalitarian state is very right, and I see our culture as very apathy engendering.
Well, again, I say because it's, we're so also scattered too, in many ways. It's hard to, well, like say Virginia, Minnesota. It's like off on its own. It's like another country. It has very little to do with the problems and processes of cities and wars, unless your number's called up. And even then, as I said, six boys out of a class of probably 270 kids, meaning 135 girls, presumably. So out of 135 boys, only six had their number called up. That's very low. They haven't even felt the war. They don't know what the war is. And I realized, too, probably one of the reasons that their casualties were so low there was that they had this town with a good financial base. They had this tax money. Almost everybody there went on to junior college. Nat was an officer because at a certain point he'd washed out of flight training at a certain level. He didn't have the ability. I guess he got as far as Piper Cubs or something, and he could still fly a little plane if he had to, but he didn't, above that, he didn't have it. But what happened is he washed out, he's on his way down to apprentice seaman. The government needs several people with some college, at least, to make officers, 90-day wonders out of. So he washed out of the Air Force and into the officer corps. And this happened to a lot of his classmates. A lot of them had commissions in the Army, which were sort of not, it was not usual if you didn't have college.
The majority of commissions, too, are non-combat positions.
Sure, that's what I mean. So they're not in the front lines like the rest of the world in this particular community,
unless
which makes it a little
second
special.
Second lieutenants have the shortest survival rate in combat.
But you know, I've been getting to wonder about that. There must be an infantry, because I've been watching the death notices in the paper of people killed. It's always lance corporals. It's always privates, specialists. Very few officers. There was one killed. One Arlington boy was killed. It wasn't a boy. He was about 28, I guess. And he was a Navy man. But he was the only officer I'd noticed in ages.
Should I wake up Pat?
What time is it?
10:30.
Yes, wake her up and tell her if she wants to go see the astronauts, she better get off her bed. Oh, she's a sleeper. Up there, they stay up to midnight and 1 o'clock, watch television, gas around, and just sleep all day. Swing around the country in many ways looked more like the graduate than I would like to say. Only it wasn't. Not in Virginia. Really, that didn't. That was old home week for 48 hours.
Yeah.
But the lush life up around Minnetonka is, it's just incredible. And it's, the grapes on the table. I nearly threw up. And yet, what do you say, Leon? She's no ideologue. She doesn't even know there's a problem about grapes. Or if she does, she wouldn't know what it had to do with her particularly.
Yeah.
She's a very hard worker. She's always been a hard worker. But she just sees that as a way of life. She's from Erling, Iowa. Bob is always working. But it's his play. His work is his play, flying those little airplanes. But when you see all that, this is the fat of the land, and it's ironic to me that that while we get fat, we must have grapes. Really, it's...
At the rehearsal dinner, I was the only one who cut right off that there were grapes in the salad cup, you know, we call it chopped fruit.
What did you do?
Picked them all out and spread them in a line.
It's the least you can do for the cause.
Well, after I got about four out there, the bride saw, she carved one right away, and then she picked up the rest of hers and nudged everybody around her, and they were all very abashed that they had, you know, dug in and not analyzed
the ingredients. What one does, though, at a time like that, I suppose, is because of the occasion, you don't want to embarrass anybody and so forth. You know. Mm. What you did was probably very appropriate. It has that touch to peel out the grapes, you might say. Sidney Harris had an article the other night about one of his children had asked about the Depression. You know, what did you do in the Depression, Daddy? kind of thing. And so he was trying to describe to this kid what the Depression was really like. But the fact was that many fewer poor people committed suicide. In fact, very few.
Yeah,
but it was the rich. And he was saying, why? It's the plunge. It's not living at a low level. It's the plunge from a high level to the low level that seems to put people out of commission. And I was trying to think why. You know what I decided after reading that? I don't think it's so much that people can't live without things. I think it's because it's so involved in pride.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not. Yeah. It's not. Who you are seems to have so much to do with what you have as you acquire it. And
if there were any real honesty in this country, the whole ruling class would have killed themselves.
Oh, but there isn't, really.
No.
No. In fact, it's all such a hit or miss proposition, what you have. It's absurd. Yeah. You know, there's a country with such a mystique of work hard, you know, and get it. It's ridiculous. It's just plain ridiculous. The people who have it work less than anybody,
yeah.
And they always did, moreover, because their father gave it to them a lot of times, or else they had some lucky streak, or so much of it is just blind luck. And I like
so much of it is, I mean, it's the blind luck of being born into that area in which the cards are stacked.
Right. Yeah, that's all. And yet we have this business of work hard and God will take care of you. Well, somebody's taking care of us these days. I don't know who it is or what it is. Do you ever read Gregory Baum? I haven't read anything, but they say he has a demonology too. He keeps getting back to the lower, the things in people that they're not aware of until they're overcome by them. But this is the constant shadow. It's the heart of darkness that you don't look into, that you won't admit it's there. It's the opposite of angelism, is demonism. If you believe everything is demons, then you don't have any responsibility. Or if you think you're an angel, then you have rejected the responsibility you do have. You say, well, if we were all just a little smarter, education is a marvelous thing,
yeah.
And you know, we'll all be great if we have that. But I haven't read any of this stuff because I've almost given up theologians. I did enjoy that exchange with Frank, but he's so funny in himself. I asked him why theologians didn't give up altogether for a while, declare a moratorium for a few years, and quit sorting out different notions of God and try to figure out people a little bit. And he had a good answer. He said, you can't stop people from speculating about God because it goes right to the heart of who am I and where did I come from, and you can't stop people talking about it. He said, so I'm sorry, but there'll always be a place for us theologians.
It's like Dewey's idea of creativity, and the relationship of creativity to just skill. And he says that your ability to have a vision of something you want to create in your mind depends upon your ability to understand the complexity of the materials you're going to be working with.
Mm-hmm.
So that creative vision always expands in an internal and an external direction.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true with theology. In a sense, it's an external knowledge, but one's ability to conceive of a particular kind of external
world,
universe
yeah. Mm-hmm.
is going to be his ability to find analogy.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the way I look at all these theologies are just as the latest projection of some person who's searching, it doesn't mean that he's right or wrong, but it is just the latest projection, and all the rest have been scrapped, so there's no more reason to accept this new one than any of the old ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't accept, I mean, per se, we disagree on this developmental thing, gas.
Oh, the gas. Oh, well, I don't, the only thing I disagree with about that is that as a person, I, again, reject the idea of being a becoming. I mean, I, of course, would like to think how a person is improving as he goes on. And one hopes one does.
Evidence.
Yeah. But I don't see how you can be a human being with your own worth. I mean, and speaking from the point of view, if there's a God at all, how can you have any worth as a person and as an individual if you're a part of a becoming?
Well,
in other words, you have to be for yourself if you're for anything.
Yeah, but first you have to accept worth means value, okay? And valuation is a human process, not a metaphysical process. So whether or not one has value is going to depend on whether or not one chooses to have value. I wonder whether or not anything has value is whether
that's
or not you decide it to have value.
But you see, I'm deciding to have value.
No.
And I'm not. And I'm not going to let anybody, with, not even Teilhard, he can't take away my value by saying I'm part of a gas.
No, I don't think he does. I think he accentuates this.
He doesn't, though,
choice,
because he devaluates by making it a process.
No, but he makes it a process.
Part of a process.
At this point.
But see, I can't volitionally enter into this process. I can see in another way, as a person contributing to the, you know, hopefully the growth of the human being. But as a person, not as a part of the process. A person contributes
right.
to a process.
Well, this is the
but a person is not a part of a process.
Well, this is the
except
thing.
As he consciously contributes, or even unconsciously. See, I would rather have them unconsciously contributing too. Really, because I don't know how you can take a human being, given all the limitations every human being has from the day they're born,
and make his consciousness that on which things stand.
Right. There has to be some, as far as I'm concerned, some absolute value in the person as such. And after that, everything else. You know, I don't know what the Stone Age guy, I don't suppose I'd like to sit down and have a conversation with him.
Well, mostly we've talked about, though, in the past, the value of people outside of any scheme of priorities and values.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
In other words, they talk about Neil Armstrong and the great spirit of man. Well, these are just nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
What they are trying to
the same is, spirit that sent them into wars. In,
right,
in many
exactly.
ways. Spirit is spirit. It's high spirit, you might say, or
yeah.
it's searching or something, or it's, it might even be fighting spirit. Not
general
all good.
Dynamics,
high spirit is what I call it.
But he tries to put it in a schema of, you know, given what we know about how things have been, you know, where do we still find the value of man? And he says that given what paleontology can tell you, the value of man actually increases considerably. He has that there's two things, tangential and radial energy,
mm-hmm.
whereby at each stage a thing actually becomes more individualized and more interdependent at the same time. So that,
yes.
so
well,
that
that's
the
where we
value
are now.
On the individual as an independent entity is increased.
At least insofar as he's conscious of. You go with the business of increased consciousness is...
Yeah, except that I don't think... I think we
you
have
see, I think that's
ideas
again,
of consciousness.
I think again, though, that people just tend to put up their own gods. I mean,
yeah,
the latest one being consciousness.
Well, but I think we have a warped idea of consciousness from rationalists. We tend to think of consciousness as meaning the increased... and more prolonged type of rationality. I think we probably need some kind of new model.
Well, I get the impression of talking about awareness. By the way, that reminds me, before I forget, do you ever read Doris Lessing or not? You should probably read Doris Lessing for...
I have essays by her and I could look at.
Read The Golden Notebook. Read The Golden Notebook. This is just an aside, so I don't forget.
Is it a book?
Yes, it's a book. It's a long book, and it's about really... it's one woman's sort of... the reason I mention this is because it struck me as being the real vision of what a woman's life is like in a revolution. And Dr. Mentioned, when he was here for a party, I think, somebody's farewell party, he said that he never really understood how women feel in an affair or in any kind of marriage, all kinds of associations with men, until he read The Golden Notebook. And so I thought, well, by golly, I got to read the book that will tell any man what it's like. And I read it, and it's hard to read, though, because she keeps going back from... She's got several notebooks in there, one, the golden being the end, but the blue notebook, the black notebook, and they're all different phases of her relationships with politics, her political self, and her marriage self, her mother self. I don't know, I got ours at the library up here, but it's one of the... Oh, yes, it's in paperback. I remember his wife told me that now. But I don't know what young people would make of this. I understand she's one of the new idols of the movement. And I read this book and I say, why? If they've got any brains in their head at all, why would they call this... She is the warning, as far as I can see. Because she goes way back into Africa. And she's not preaching. She still believes in it. But what I say is that if this is what you want, here it is, babe. It's in and out of bed with all kinds of people, serving their needs and always being tangential yourself. She was always there and soft-hearted and not soft-headed, but always able to see the other person's needs and yet saying, well, you know, maybe this time.
You got to read The Life of Rosa Luxemburg. She was the...
I'd probably find it.